is dialogue. Dialogue, a presentation of the Public Affairs and Special Events Department of KLRB News. Today, Dialogue Assassination with Research Specialist Mae Brussel. Well, Mae, we covered an awful lot of ground last week, some questions have come up concerning some of the things we discussed last week. And at the end of last week's program, you touched off something very interesting, handing me a book called Who's Who in the CIA and pointing out that Eugene McCarthy's name appeared in there. And I thought we could touch on that a little deeper this week. Howard Hughes' name has been in the news an awful lot here lately, and you have a pretty nice dossier on him.
I've been a Hughes watcher since the summer of 68, or a little before, and I pulled out of my file the material and looked at it last night. I'll show you some of the early articles I brought in, because Howard Hughes has to be related to the political assassinations, and we'll go into that on the second half of the program. Were you surprised to see this book, Who's Who in the CIA?
Yeah, where did the book come from?
Well, the book came from East Germany, and there was an article about it in the newspaper several years ago, and quite a stir was caused, and I wrote to the publishers, and a man in San Jose was supposed to carry it. I wrote all over the country, and then I found one at a bookstore in Washington, in Georgetown. They were grabbing them up like mad to see if everybody who lived in Georgetown was listed in the book.
Find out how many of their neighbors were in the book.
And then the publication was never sold in this country. It was put out. People, high agents, not every low-level informant, but the big boys. And I brought it in because we were talking about Eugene McCarthy and political elections, and it's apropos of political assassinations, because I maintain that the electoral process has not been any different than electing Mr. Thieu in Vietnam, that our government agencies select the candidates for us. And if by a fluke one gets in that they don't want, or that he won't go along with them, like John Kennedy, they kill him. Or if they know Robert Kennedy is not going to go along with them, the agency can have him killed as a candidate. So I made a promise to bring the book and mention some of the people in this book who are related to my political assassination. And instead of doing a whole show on that today, because we have so much to cover, I'll just read one name each week. Maybe bring the book in each week.
We'll have a continuing series of Who's Who in the CIA.
Who's Who in the CIA that's related to the political assassinations. So I brought in my minutes of the Warren Commission meeting. The commission members had a stenographer take down some of their meetings. They've been declassified. And at one of the meetings of the Warren Commission, the problem came up of who is going to write the Warren Report. And Earl Warren, chairman of the Warren Commission, chief justice of the United States, said, in quotes, there's an important part of our work is going to be putting it together. We have to write one document. So we have consulted the Defense Department, and they have offered to lend us one of their historians to do the job. And we think it's quite essential to the work of the commission. Mr. Rankin, the attorney for the commission, the chief attorney, said, Mr. Goldberg is one of the men that the Defense Department has sent over. Goldberg is with the Air Force. The other man is Coakley. He's with the Army. Alan Dulles, chief of the CIA, who is a member of the Warren Commission, said, can they write? This is the Warren Commission. Can Mr. Goldberg write from the Air Force or Mr. Coakley? And Mr. Rankin, the attorney, made the remark, Mr. Winokur recommended them. Well, the meeting goes on, and I would like to read the minutes of the whole meeting. It's fascinating.
Now, this is an official United States government document.
Yeah, this has been declassified. It was declassified February 21st, 1968, from the Warren Commission files. It was marked top secret, and some of the material in the archives is
now,
being...
Now, who recommended these gentlemen?
Mr. Goldberg from the Air Force and Coakley from the Army were recommended by the chief investigator for the Warren Commission. Mr. Rankin is telling Earl Warren, I will send you somebody to write the Warren Report, because Mr. Warren is saying it's important to get a good author to tie this whole thing together. So I consulted the Defense Department, Earl Warren says. So he was in on this. And Mr. Rankin gives the names. And when Alan Dulles says, can they write? Mr. Rankin said, Mr. Whitaker recommended them. Now, in my research, I take the names and index the names that come up in these various documents. So I turn to W and write Whitaker, and I never read about him before. I never heard about him before. But when the little document, Who's Who in the CIA, came out, I look up some of the names that appear in my archive documents of the Warren Report, and I turn to page 562. Dr. Rudolph August Whitaker, born 1904 in Germany, lecturer in history, analyst in the OSS from 1942 to 1945. Now, 1942, Hitler was still going. The war wasn't over. 1942, 1945, an analyst in the OSS. 1945 to 1949, those are the years that we're talking about where Alan Dulles took the chief of German intelligence, Reinhard Galen, into our CIA, and the OSS became the CIA. Mr. Whitaker became the historian in the War Department. In 1949 to 1965, he became the chief of historical division of the Pentagon. That's Mr. Rudolph August Whitaker. I would like to know how long he was in Nazi Germany, whether he came over with Reinhard Galen. I haven't been able to find out much more about Whitaker, but his office of operation, it says, is Washington, D.C. He wrote the Warren Report. He sent the men and wrote the Warren Report. When I say there's Nazis and Germans running our government, believe me, there is. You see articles in the Sunday paper, various articles referring to the Krauts in Germany, in Washington now, or the Germans. If you list them by name, they're really in power. But Mr. Whitaker wrote the Warren Report. Also last week, for those who didn't hear the show, we mentioned, like you say, that Eugene McCarthy is listed in the book of Who's Who and CIA. And that was last Saturday. And then Sunday, when I read my New York Times, which I take daily, there was an article about the Democrats are in debt, and they have to raise money for the next campaign. Well, we know they're in debt, about $8 million. So the idea was proposed by a Thomas F. McCoy, former Central Intelligence Agency man, to raise the money for the next 72 campaign. And in the article, it said that Mr. McCoy was the money raiser for Eugene McCarthy in the 1968 campaign. The CIA, when they say an ex-CIA, there is no such thing. You can just erase the X. There's no way of a man claiming I am CIA.
That's like being ex-mafia member.
There are men who say I'm CIA or FBI. But this man from the Central Intelligence Agency raised the money for Eugene McCarthy. Remember we said last week that I thought his sole role was to smoke out Robert Kennedy, that Robert already had a deal with Lyndon Johnson, and Eugene McCarthy was in on that deal. And then there was another article in the paper, Joseph Alsop, yesterday, that Eugene McCarthy is the secret weapon that Richard Nixon uses, that by his going into the election and saying that he's going to run, he is the best thing for Richard Nixon. He's going to split the Democratic Party. And it also goes on to say, this was in your Monterey Herald, an article saying, with Eugene McCarthy running, the Democratic Party will suffer. McCarthy is a powerful hater, and Senator Muskie has now replaced the late President Kennedy as McCarthy's most loathed fellow Democrat. So if McCarthy wants to hurt Muskie, he'll coax Ted Kennedy to run, which I think he's sitting in the background waiting to do anyway. I think McCarthy is in on this game, this strategy of moving people around, and his funding does come from the Central Intelligence Agency. Now, last week, we talked about those x-rays that were in the newspaper, the article about the x-rays on John Kennedy.
Urologist whose expert testimony proved that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin.
That's right. There were a lot of people who asked me during the week or called or said, well, what do you think about that article about the x-rays? And I got five letters from people in Los Angeles, friends, asking me, what do you think about that? And they still couldn't see through a statement of the urologist that he examined the x-rays and they showed that Oswald shot John Kennedy. But I'm not going to review. We did a whole show last week on that. I'm just going to read part of the New York Times article on that subject, which was not included in the West Coast version, which said that other researchers now will be allowed to go into the archives, and the basis of letting them in will not be whether they agree or disagree with the Warren Commission report, and that one of the men mentioned who will be going into the archives is Dr. John Nichols of the University of Kansas, the pathologist who has written critically of the Warren report. Now, that is one of the big breaks of the researchers, because Mr. Nichols has a lawsuit against the National Archives because he's done experiments on the description of the bullet wounds in John Kennedy and claims that there are chemical particles that are different in each of the wounds, and therefore it had to be two guns. And he is going to be allowed to get into the archives. I'm hoping all of this comes down before 72. We're into 72 now, but anything can happen. The field is wide open if you read the newspapers. And we're going to wrap about some of that today.
So much of the evidence was changed before it got into the archives, though, like the original autopsy was torn up and rewritten.
Well, there's still enough material locked up. I could read a list of the documents that are in there that have not been available. I don't know if they'll declassify those now or whether those hold tight for 75 years. But if there's any discrepancy in those bullets or in the chemical nature of the fragments of the coat that he can find and put them to certain tests, scientific tests, if there's any discrepancies, I think the case could be blown open.
And you think Dr. Nichols is the man to find out?
I have confidence in him. Somebody said, well, who do you trust? Dr. Nichols is a person that I recognize as a researcher. The New York Times also quoted Harold Weisberg, who's written four books on the John Kennedy assassination, who is a valuable researcher and a very thorough, exact person. And the New York Times said Harold Weisberg, author of a series of critical works of the Warren Report, termed Dr. Latimer an apologist for the Warren Commission and asked, what does a urologist know about bullet holes in human bodies? So our program last week was all about that.
Yes, in case you missed that program last week, the gist of it was that May took the newspaper article about Dr. Latimer paragraph by paragraph and pointed out discrepancies. And I think we're being kind when we say discrepancies. But Dr. Latimer is the urologist who was permitted to examine some of the evidence, the photographs and x-rays and what have you, in the archives. And somehow, by looking at the x-rays and the photographs, he was able to identify the assassin.
By looking at the x-rays.
Yes, and this wasn't really his specialty. He's a urologist, and they didn't say anywhere in there that he examined any urine specimens or anything of that
nature.
Well,
I'm glad he got in there, because now the real scientists can get in. And
that was the point I was going to make, but yeah. The fact that he was allowed to examine the evidence now opens the archives
up to
serious researchers.
That's right. Now, there's something in the newspaper which I think you people out there listening should get involved in, and I'm going to make suggestions to you, because we've said before, this is the year of positive action and not just complaining. The government is hearing arguments starting today on whether or not to have the death penalty. And the arguments given against the death penalty are that it is cruel punishment, it's inhuman punishment, and that it's a racist thing, the blacks and the poor, the underprivileged.
That it's selective, yes.
Selective. The death penalty is selective. But I'm sending off a letter to every member of the Senate and a few members of the House of Representatives. That'll be like 200 or 300 letters this week. And this is the way I express myself to these particular members of our Congress. And I wish the people out there would listen carefully and take down certain points that I believe are important on the death penalty that are never brought up. And it's time that they are. And I bring them from the point of view of a conspiratorial cover-up on killing these people. Very conveniently does away with who's behind the murder. Now, the arguments that I am writing to the congressman about, and we can discuss these, Bob, against the death penalty are these. In the first place, a man could be innocent, and he can be framed. I've studied evidence that was planted and evidence that was framed, and I think that a man could very easily be put to the death sentence with evidence that was planted. And in studying Oswald and things that were put in his home and garage, or the rifle that was ordered in his name that he didn't have, or James Ray, the way he was told to leave the rooming house and he wasn't even there and came back and was part of a thing but didn't actually do it. I studied evidence planted, men framed. I'm beginning to go into the Alger Hiss case, the hotel registration in Albuquerque, the Rosenbergs. And it's very important in a power struggle in the United States where fascism is very anxious to be the system to replace democracy, that people aren't murdered to effect the social change.
Well, there is a historical precedent of men being imprisoned or actually executed and later found to be innocent. So it's not just a question that it's possible. It has happened.
Yeah, or in these political murders, you know they're never going to find the man who was involved. Lewis Tackwood, a member of the L.A. Police Department, an informer for 10 years, surfaced this year and made the charge that there's a man on death row today that's there because he lied. He was paid by the LAPD because they wanted a conviction. And this man is sitting up in San Quentin in death row. And the Yevil Younger and Ronald Reagan and nobody is taking a position of who this man is. And they're ignoring Mr. Tackwood because his charges were really so heavy. So this is an example of a man being framed. And I have documents from former FBI men on how they planted evidence. There was a discussion made in Princeton, New Jersey. Ex-FBI agent tells, his name is Matusow, and he admitted fabricating evidence in different trials. And there are members of the FBI who are involved in this, but there are police department men who are paid off and given promotions to plant evidence. The Jack Kirschke evidence was tampered with. He's up on death row, or it was commuted to life sentence when they found that his evidence was tampered with in L.A. So a man could be innocent. And if somebody wants a raise in the department or wants to get a position of power, they will get an informer to say that he was guilty. The second objection to the death penalty I have is that men like Jack Ruby are used by a peer group, and they may not know that they're going to be involved in any other murder or killing. And because of their insecurities, they can be used to murder somebody. And Jack Ruby was given the death penalty, but before he could die, he was sending notes out of jail and he was killed. But men, because of their insecurities, like Jack Ruby, being Jewish in an anti-Semitic society, meeting with the worst anti-Semites in town, could be coaxed to make a deal. And Jack Ruby owed the government $40,000 in back taxes that were at the Internal Revenue Office the day of the assassination. There was a woman who has a document affidavit in the Warren Commission hearings that she was a decorator for nightclubs, that Jack Ruby was going to have a fancy new nightclub and come to a lot of money. There's a real estate man who showed Ruby property for a fancy club. Ruby was in debt, but over and again, he was making provisions with a Mr. Rossi to be a partner in a new high-class Playboy bunny club thing that he had never had before. He would have a prestige club.
Wasn't there a waitress in his restaurant who had overheard some conversations, and she was picked up on charges of prostitution or something and committed suicide in her cell?
Well, Betty McDonald was a friend of Jack Ruby's. Yeah, she was picked up. She was with Warren Reynolds, a man who was supposed to have seen Tippit running through a lot, and she died right after the assassination. She was in the Dallas Police Department. She was hung, and they said it was suicide, but her connections were very heavy. But my argument against the death penalty is, first, a man can be innocent, and the second, he can be used not knowing how far up a conspiracy goes. And if you kill Jack Ruby, he can't talk. And again, on another show, I want to do the dialogue of Ruby with Earl Warren, where he wanted to tell what happened, and Earl Warren wouldn't let him.
And now that's in the Warren Commission report,
oh, yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah. Do you want to read that with me next week?
I think that would be very interesting.
Okay. So if you kill Ruby and gave him the death penalty, and he's begging Earl Warren to tell what happened, then that part of history is sealed off forever. Then another objection I have to the death penalty is that parole is offered people to commit crimes. They're let out of jail, like James Ray was let out of the Missouri Penitentiary. Charles Manson was on parole. The police department, the Special Enforcement Bureau, knew where he was. At Soledad and our local community, the officials offer men parole if they will kill a man inside the prison. And then if the prisoners get wind of it and have killings inside the prison, they get the death penalty. If we're going to have the death penalty, will we give it to the warden or to the FBI? You know, how do you decide who gets the death penalty? The planner of the murders, you know, makes the deals. You see, the man who offers parole to a prisoner and he wants to get out, he isn't subject to the death penalty.
Still, though, all these arguments are valid, but what happens when it comes before the Supreme Court or any court? They deal with it strictly in terms of legality. And the constitutional question that's being argued, as a matter of fact, the only argument that I've heard put forth by those who favor the death penalty, that side of the question, is that the framers of the Constitution obviously did not consider it cruel and inhuman punishment because they approved of the death penalty then, so it's still valid today. In other words, what the opponents are trying to establish is that somewhere over the past 190 years...
That it's been historically acceptable.
That, that maybe some attitudes have changed over that period and that maybe we do consider the death penalty to be cruel and inhuman now, even though it wasn't considered so 200 years ago.
Well, the people that want the death penalty say that it's historically valid, it isn't something new, it's been going on, and they, although they admitted yesterday it is no... a deterrent to crime, it still is something.
And that's been one of their favorite things up until now. Well, that deters crime, that prevents crime, and it's been established, I think, with finality to the point where even the proponents of the death penalty accept that it does not
it
deter
does not.
Crime.
No, and then you go into another reason that I'm against the death penalty is that you use it as a threat. When James Ray was brought over from London and he didn't even have a trial, the attorney who represented him didn't go into any of the evidence of a conspiracy, and this is documented. Again, I want to read this on one of the shows. Mr. Foreman said, if you don't say you're guilty, we'll barbecue you. That was the word he used, we'll barbecue you. And James Ray was forced to say, I'm guilty, although he said to the judge there was a conspiracy, and Judge Battle said, I believe there was a conspiracy. But the threat was, do you want 99 years in jail or be barbecued? Now, if there wasn't the death penalty, you couldn't threaten James Ray with any of these alternatives. So he wouldn't have had to say he was guilty because the alternative was then that you're either guilty or you're innocent or you're involved with other people.
Well, that's why that's specifically why the Supreme Court struck down the Florida law dealing with capital punishment, was because the way the Florida law was written was if you pleaded nolo contendere, which means no contest, the worst penalty they could give you would be life imprisonment.
Yes.
But if you pleaded innocent and were found guilty, then you could be sentenced to death.
Which was terrible, yes.
But if you pleaded no contest, they could not execute you.
Yeah, well, you see, that kind of thing, it was used over James Ray. And the killings of other persons after Martin Luther King have just multiplied. I'm studying now the systematic killing of the Muslims now that they've splintered the Black Panther Party. And I have a file on that because I sort of ride with the tide. I see what's happening, and I'm charting the death of the Muslims because they're back on this group now, you know, and to spread more chaos before 1972. Now, there's another area of death penalty that I want to know where this fits in. And this is the department of the CIA or FBI, known as the Covert Black Department. This is paid killers. If our society has paid killers who are immune if they kill, how do you determine which ones are killing as part of the agency or individuals, men that commit crimes or throw bombs, that pull out a special card of ID? They don't go to jail. They get off. They are paid killers in our society. The CIA, FBI can send them all over the world and in this country. But if they are part of that agency, their names are hidden, the trials are hushed, and nothing happens. Like the Kaplan boy, Joel Kaplan was tried for murder in Mexico, killing another friend of hers who was supposed to be a co-worker and agent for the government. He was put in a Mexican jail. And then all the jailers went to a movie one night, and the CIA sent airplanes down into the courtyard, took Joel away up to Marin County somewhere, and he's off. There's a complete news blackout. And Bill Turner is going to do a book on it or an article, and I could do a show on how people kill and get away with it and don't have trials and they escape. Now, Oswald was an agent of the FBI and the CIA, but he never lived to tell it. His mother ran right up to Dallas afterwards and said, well, he's an agent of the government. What are you going to do? Well, they knew what they were going to do with him, and they quieted her down. And Sirhan has connections with FBI and the CIA and Mr. Roselli of the mafia and gangland, who was hired to kill Castro. He tried six different times, said that he was hired by Robert Mayhew, who was connected with the FBI, and through the CIA, they went to Mayhew. So if Roselli is caught, does he get the death penalty, or does Robert Mayhew get the death penalty?
Or does his boss?
Oh, yeah, that's what I wonder. How many killings, unless you stop legalizing
killings? This is one of my big objections to even having a shadow government such as the CIA in a democracy. Okay, if they want to run the country, fine. Then let the people elect the head of the CIA.
Well, they have no choice.
And we'll forget about the president and the Congress and all that sort of thing. Just let us elect the CIA.
Well, Mr. Kissinger and Richard Helms should run for presidency.
Mr. Kissinger, now, what is his official position? He's always referred to as presidential advisor.
He's making a lot of decisions. Mr. Kissinger has more power than anyone in the United States, and he works with the Central Intelligence Agency.
But Congress isn't able to make him answer for any of his advice or any of his actions. What is his official position, or does he have one?
Is he head of National Security Council?
Yeah.
Well, Mr. Kissinger is placed there to make most of the decisions, but he's a buffer between Richard Nixon and that hidden government. We'll go into that when we get into Howard Hughes now. And Kissinger is the front man.
I'd almost forgotten about Howard Hughes.
But I'm going to close the death penalty thing with referring to a letter that was in the Monterey Herald. A man named John Limper in Pacific Grove wrote a letter on antisocial germs. And he is talking about the death penalty. And he said, what alternative do you propose? What would you do with a Manson or Frazier or hundreds of other perpetrators of heinous crimes? People who plant bombs not knowing or caring who was injured or killed. And he said he doesn't think that finality of euthanasia in animals, unwanted animals, is bad. He said society is at war with the butchers on death row. Cyanide gas has proven to be an effective antibiotic against foul germs. Let's keep it in our pharmacopoeia and stamp out as many of those virulent antisocial germs as possible.
Now, very cleverly written and all that.
Well, I want to say to John Limper is this. He is talking like in Germany with cyanide gas, and let's get rid of the germs in our society who plant bombs. And I would sit with him, I will call him, and talk to him and show him how many articles I have on the FBI agents in disguise that are planting bombs, blowing up bridges. Lewis Tagwood in Los Angeles resigned from the LA Police Department because he was supposed to hire the radicals to plant bombs at the San Diego Convention and then kill those radicals so that you would think the radicals did it and the L.A. Police Department didn't hire them. This man wants to do away with Manson and Frazier, and I say those men did not kill. They were involved in a much bigger system, and they're the front men, and if you kill them, then you don't ever have a chance of knowing what happened because Charlie Manson and John Frazier know who they saw or who was related to the crimes for which they are blamed. And if you kill them, you lose a big clue to solving the question of who is doing the murdering in our society. This man is only hurting himself because he's handing over the power to the people who are doing the murders, and he's killing the link of information that we could get if we wanted it.
Well, he's also throwing out the precise kind of emotional argument that proponents of the death penalty, the people who want to keep the death penalty perhaps for sinister reasons, would throw out as a smokescreen to excite your emotions and all this. We've got to stamp out this disease in our society and the whole law and order syndrome, scare the people to death, and then give them the solution. The solution is if you kill who I say to kill.
If you kill Manson because he's a scum of society, you serve society. And yet if I talk with this man and show him who is behind the Manson thing, and spend hours with him, maybe he would have a kinder heart and really try to see that the problem is bigger than that. Evel Younger came out this week. He personally favors the death penalty in some instances. Well, the instances he would want would be people like Sirhan and Charlie Manson, because Evel Younger became the Attorney General of the state after being District Attorney in L.A., where those cases were tried, and he was involved in each of those cases. And he is the defendant in a suit, which we've read many times on the air here, of hiding information of the conspiracy to kill Robert Kennedy. So would he want Sirhan killed now, and that would be the end of the information coming out from that end? You see, Evel Younger is in no position to screen for the death penalty, and the fact that he wants it makes it dangerous. And another argument put up was that one man who is generally opposes the death penalty said he believed it should be given if a man kills somebody in prison or does a slaying for hire. That's Chief Justice Donald Wright said if a person kills for hire, he should get the death penalty. Well, that goes into who hired him. You see, again, if James Ray was part of a thing and another man hired him, why don't you look for the man who hired him?
You're listening to Dialogue Assassination with Mae Bressel on KLRB, Carmel.